Our last presenter is Aarti Desai, and she's an MPH student at Loma Linda University, and she'll continue to talk to us about community-based approaches.
Hi, thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you for joining me for this presentation entitled A Community Participatory Approach to Improving Nutrition Outcomes. In essence, this program is going to be about utilizing the best asset a community has, which are its own community members, to combat health disparities. To begin, I'd like to say that there are no relationships to disclose. In introduction, San Bernardino County, which is located in Southern California, faces many social and economic disparities that influence lifestyle choices. Loma Linda University Students has a continued partnership with Central City Lutheran Mission to address the community-identified issues surrounding nutrition and nutritional illnesses. And an important thing to note is that this is community-identified issues. Background into San Bernardino is 62.9% of adults in San Bernardino County are overweight or obese. And currently, the rate has increased to 63.9%, which shows an increase and not the trend that we are looking for. And also, approximately 1 in 10 adults suffer from diabetes. Given these statistics, we developed a program utilizing four methods. The first thing we did was conduct a literature review of existing programs to combat some of these issues, and also reviewed an existing curriculum that was initiated by a past group. We also utilized internet resources to get more data and got information from American Diabetes Association and American Heart Association. Given this, we realized that nutrition was a major issue, and particularly nutrition in terms of food availability and food access or the lack of access. Also, contributing factors to a sedentary lifestyle included the general feeling of being unsafe, unsafe roads and sidewalks, and also the high crime rate in this area. All this contribute to illnesses such as cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and obesity, which I had mentioned earlier. The second approach that we utilized was a rapid assessment model. We used windshield surveys, photo analysis, focus group, and key informant interviews to assess what the community has so we can utilize these resources. We discovered that continued interest in cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and nutritional education was still present, and modification of the curriculum for cultural and linguistic relevancy was very important. And what this means is that since we worked with a predominantly Hispanic community, we utilized staple foods and things that they had within their community. So if we were to say, why don't you try to buy organic foods because that might be healthier, that might not be the best thing because economically it's not feasible for them. So we used staple foods and gave them alternatives such as using sunflower oil instead of canola oil or baking food instead of using oil and frying food. Also, we took into account health literacy, and what this means is that making sure that everyone can understand the curriculum and keeping it in very lay terms. The third step that we did was revising the existing curriculum, and this was using a community participatory approach. We used feedback forms and had review meetings with important people in the community because they know their community best. We also met with a curriculum development expert on the curriculum to get his feedback, and online resources for teaching aids and utilizing a contemporary model was also used. Modification of topics were that while most of the topics were relevant, certain things such as the the food pyramid, which was utilized before, now changed to the My Plate for portion control. Other things were that they wanted more things on the community wanted more things on focusing on exercise and stress management. Like I mentioned earlier, keeping it culturally appropriate and almost building off the fact that it's a Hispanic community and using that as a positive thing, because they do have a lot of foods that are healthy, but just giving them options on how to eat healthier. Also, finally, we kept the curriculum visually appealing for those who are visual learners. This we learned was a very important method in trying to get our point across. And then using a SMOG literacy check, keeping it to a seventh grade literacy level. And this is so that everyone would be able to pick up the curriculum regardless of what your educational background was, and most of the community would be hit. Finally, we did a pilot demonstration of one of the four modules that we designed. This was the diabetes module, and it was administered by the students to a sample size of 22 participants. This was followed by a feedback discussion. Based on this, we had positive results, and we had positive results and discovered that using the community participatory approach is the best way to hit our target community. Audience was very receptive to the information, and we also learned that keeping a time frame about 1 hour for each module kept it, participants involved and engaged, and finally showed an increase in knowledge. The curriculum, this was our final product, and it was composed of four modules: cardiovascular disease, diabetes, nutrition education and exercise, and living healthy and alternative cooking methods. This is an example of a page in the curriculum, and we utilize a variety of colors and using a do, say, ask approach. So the first slide shows goals, objectives, and methods, clearly saying what this module is going to entail, followed by different colors, the do, what you should the activities that you need to do in this module. Say what you need to say. So anyone who can pick this curriculum, all they have to do is say this, and then ask questions to ask to facilitate a discussion among other community members. This project was sustainable basically because it is the community's conception. Since they have an investment in this and this is their interest, this is their investment because this is the stuff that they asked us to help them with. It also, the curriculum is self-contained in that all the materials, including all the activities and all the things to facilitate this discussion, are all included and is also available in an online version. It is taught by volunteers in the community, so people who come in know this could be their neighbor, it could be their church, someone they go to church with. It kind of creates a sense of community while people are learning about health and healthier lifestyle choices. Since CCLM has a lot of existing programs, this is a great way to supplement a lot of the teachings that are already going on. And like I mentioned earlier, utilizing the culture and keeping it culturally appropriate with staple foods, literacy appropriate, so it is easy to be understood by everyone, and also literacy appropriate, just again, to make it what we are teaching understandable to everyone. There's no point in using big words such as vascular dilation or arrhythmia if they don't understand what it means. So using simple words such as maybe clog or clot or irregular heartbeat would be a better way to teach our curriculum and hit the most amount of people. Questions or comments? I guess I'll save that till the end, but thank you so much.
Well, I think we have to thank our presenters for keeping us, you know, within time for questions and for a very good presentation. So now we have about 15 minutes left. So are there any questions? Any of our presenters?
So we've actually done a lot of work with our sort of longitudinal data, if you will. So we asked that question at baseline and then every month through 12 months. But so we have done some work looking at seasonal effect. However, we enrolled for a year, and there were no months that had higher enrollment rates. And each person with asthma has different seasonal variations. Therefore, the effect is not seasonal. But I did test for it. But I leave that out of the analysis that we present because it didn't have an effect. Yeah. Yep. So a 504 accommodation plan is something that it might be called something different in other states. I'm not sure. But essentially, if you're a child or any child with, let's use asthma, you have asthma, and therefore you might not be able to participate in certain things. Gym class, if you have it, outside on a high smog alert day. So a 504 plan addresses all of those things, has your doctor's approval on it, and then it's on file at school. And so basically what that says is that the school is responsible for giving that child an activity that works for them. So you can't just sit in a corner, which is pretty much what happens in most of our schools.
Any other questions?
The curriculum, we did it in English, and it's going to be translated by the CCLM facility.
But you will do it in the community.
Mm-hmm. It was a Spanish-speaking community, so we conducted it in English, and then the facility will translate it to Spanish, and so the teachings will be done in both, it's bilingual, so it can be done in English, and it can also be done in Spanish, because a lot of the other programs that CCLM holds are, they have a Spanish one on Tuesdays and an English one on Wednesdays.
I have a question for one of the presenters. What was your sample size, Trevor?
The beginning sample size was 154, and at the end we had 73 that we got full data for at the 6 week following. The pre and post is about exactly the same size because we had them for that truncated period of time.
About
63. In about 73 at the follow up, right.
And are you guys planning on looking at significant changes or things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to get more cases together before we do anything. It makes any sense. This is the first really good data set that we had that's complete. We had at least enough that you felt somewhat confident that you saw something actually. Say again.
It's ongoing.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, we're in the middle of it right now.
And do you or have you thought about doing any checking on behaviors, not just reporting?
Yes, we have actually thought about doing something that a friend of mine used to do. He is a person that's interested in leisure studies and does outdoor activity tests to see how many people, what kind of activity they do outdoor and what time they do them. And he had used in the past a fairly interesting methodology, and that was to put beepers on people and call them at a random time of the day and ask them what they're doing. And so we're dealing with kids, so it may not be quite as feasible in that way, but do some sort of something that uses a logic like that, where you actually try to find out what they're doing at a specific time of day and not just rely on self-report. Because, well, self-report can be okay, but it's oftentimes the best we got. But I think ultimately we would like to be able to do something where we know exactly what they're doing and what time of day they're doing it.
We have another question.
Yes.
The first presenter, you talked about the REACH program, and I'm very familiar with REACH from years ago back also, but you talked about the impact that it had. Was there any measurement, reliably valid scale measurements that you talked about? Were there any that were employed in terms of your evaluation of things about this?
In various aspects, but so far for the youth soccer program and the community kitchen, basically we just did satisfaction surveys with participants. We did not have any sort of baseline of how many kids who entered this or the youth soccer league or the community kitchens, how many of the adult participants were obese or overweight or had diabetes, no. So with these, well, I should back this up. In REACH 2010, that was a research demonstration grant, so we were a lot more rigorous in terms of the specific measures that we were evaluating. But with REACH US, since a lot of our activities were more community mobilization oriented and more organic in terms of what community or residents expressed wanting, some of the evaluation was more based on how successfully were they able to get this off the ground. So in terms of baseline measures, we don't have health measures. It's more just satisfaction measures and just the fact that something even exists. For example, now there's access to a tangible physical activity in this area. One, now there is this community kitchen, so they have access to one form of access to healthy access to affordable food. There actually has been a result of, we've been trying to document what are some things that have followed up with that. So for example, with the community kitchen, I don't know if you're familiar with Stockbox or some portable grocery store, more novel grocery store activities or endeavors that people have done. Stockbox is basically like a crate that they basically just planted on a corner in the South Park area. And part of the reason they decided to locate it in South Park is because of all the work they had done with the digital stories in compellingly telling their stories about having lack of access to healthy foods and the successful work of the community kitchen. And so, so again, it's not like individual health indicators, but more just counting what are some of the ways that we have improved access to healthy eating.
Did you say that it's a community clinic, though?
It is a community clinic.
I wonder if you could look at some of the medical records, see if anything, or even like a zip code analysis.
Well, the problem, yeah, but the problem with that is the sample size is so small.
There's a question.
That report, is there going to be anything in that report that will kind of be a guide for people to use? Will it be like indicators selectively identified in there that will be numerators, denominators, or any way that people will be able to use that?
Okay, the first report. There are two reports. The first report has already been out. It's the 2011 Health Disparities and Inequalities Report. That report documents what you're talking about.
Okay.
The report that we're producing is a response to the CHDIR. What we have in that report are intervention strategies and programs and projects that are proven to work. It's not based on statistics, IFI, or anything of that nature. We do have statistics, but we're focusing more so on the intervention strategies than the statistics.
Any further questions? I have a question for the police. Did you do any capacity building so that when you're talking about the community kitchens and, for example, the restaurant owner, did you work with him so that he could then extend your efforts beyond to the rest of the community in some fashion?
Yeah, so there was a lot of capacity building involved in all of the different activities. I mean, one of the things that the restaurant owner had expressed was he knew that diabetes was a big issue in the Latino community and that diabetes was a big problem in his own family, but he didn't know much about it. So before we could even do anything, we just spent a lot of time just educating him about diabetes and also about nutrition. Because the point wasn't that we were going to create the menu. It was that way he had a better understanding about what are healthy ingredients, and then he could help conceive of how to alter his menu. And then he worked with our certified diabetes educator and/registered dietitian on modifying his menu. Because then that way he felt like he had the knowledge base to be able to tamper or tinker with new recipes and feel confident that those would be considered helpful menu items.
Just here one more time, I'm sorry, it's over here. That response you said and what you just did about the sub-ethnicity of Latinos is really important. We published in the Journal of Clinical Nursing Research on diabetes, and the sub-ethnicity, not only did it the past few years, that we started looking at Latinos and the sub-ethnicity. And it's like you look at a restaurant menu and it has an educational feature on diabetes, which I really believe is a great thing to have. And not to be fully correct, I think it's a great thing to have. But it's a big difference between a Puerto Rican and a Colombian and a Puerto Rican and a Mexican and a Mexican and a Mayan who does studies in all those. And that's a really good finding in the Journal of Clinical Nursing Research. So it would be really nice to say, like your study showed, you broke down by sub-ethnic groups. And it may sound like a little something, but it's it gets to the meat of all we need to 15 also when you're breaking down sub-ethnicity to to the lowest level common denominator. So I just think if there is any way those can marry those opportunities, people are conscious raising. Sorry, I talked too much.
No, you know, I was going to respond that I'm in Miami, where we are really a diverse Latino community. So we have Cubans, we have Puerto Ricans, we have a growing Mexican-American population as well. Now the fastest growing population in the state. So for us it's a challenge every time that we do this, because we have a sizable Colombian community as well, Peruvians and Central Americans. So we really represent the Latino community in the U.S.
It's so important too, something that sometimes group within one group has
some benefits, right? Just another, local level data. I mean, even looking at Mexicans all in one, I mean, we've showed that there's a Hispanic group that's Puerto Rican to the north of our hospital that has a diabetes rate of 28%. 28%, that's the highest
it's
I think
the
I've ever talked about.
It has the highest rate.
It does have the highest diabetes rate. Anyway, local level data.
And
the highest asthma rate as well.
I know.
Yeah.
And the other presenter saying 63% of obesity, that's off the charts.
Yeah, well, I have a sample just like that in South Texas, where I had about 65% of my sample were overweight or obesity, but. So it doesn't surprise me.
We just moved into South Texas.
Well, I worked in that area for 20 years.
And that's one of the things that we've discovered is that this kind of intervention we're trying to do just around obesity is going to have to be done somewhat differently with the Mexican-American population.
Yeah, absolutely.
There. And so that's been one of the nice, interesting, it's not a challenge so much, but it's a new learning experience. It's going to be very different, I think, working with that population than working with predominantly African-American population over the last several years.
Well, if there are no further questions, we thank you, and we thank our presenters again. I think